This is for the oral interview for the Roberson Project. I'm Keena Shea Pennicott. I'm a freshman here at Sewanee, and I'll be interviewing you. Would you like to share your names and the year that you graduated?
Yes, I'm Asia Besa, formerly Watson, and I graduated in 2007.
I'm Justin Smith, graduated in class of 2010.
I am Bakari Holly, formerly Bakari Faulkner, class of 2010.
So the importance of these oral interviews are to get your perspective on what Sewanee was like then and how you made your way. So one of the questions is, can you share a story or stories that stand out in your memory about how you made your way at Sewanee?
Ladies first.
Well, I found Sewanee through my high school, the Galloway School in Atlanta, Georgia. My principal of the school, Gordon Mathis, was a Sewanee alumni. And when I was a junior in high school, he told me about a program in math and science here at Sewanee called the Bridge Program that I should apply for it. So I applied and I got in, spent the summer between junior and senior year of high school at Sewanee learning math and science, and then applied, got in, and ended up attending.
Yeah.
I would have never even known about the school on this beautiful plateau but for Gordon Mathis and the Bridge Program.
For me, it's a football journey. So in high school, I was a pretty decent football player. I wanted to play at the next level, but unfortunately, my coaches at my school did not do anything to help me achieve that dream. So, you know, this is back in 2006. Technology was nothing like it is now. So I had to put together tapes, you know, just do a whole bunch of stuff that was completely foreign to me, order to get a recruiting package out to the schools that I thought I could probably, you know, either walk on to or make it at via scholarship. And unfortunately, none of it worked out. So I was just kind of lost, just waiting on certain applications to go out based on my academics because I was still a good student. Mm-hmm. One of my brother's close friends happened to be working in admissions here in Sewanee. He said, "Well, you know, what are your brother's test scores?" So once he told me my test scores, he was like, "No, he needs to be a Sewanee. No, that's crazy." So he had me come out. I put in an application. I did a visit. It just so happened to be one of the weakest times to come to Sewanee because there was nobody here during spring break.
Yeah.
And I love the campus. I think that if people had been here, I would not have been able to absorb how beautiful, how quiet, how serene, and how focused the campus is. And later in life, I was diagnosed with ADHD, and it was particularly important that I made that decision then, not knowing that I was ADHD. Because if I had gone somewhere else that was more busy, I never would have finished, and I never would have had the experience with the people that I met here, because I would just been all over the place. So, really coming to Sewanee saved me from a lot of heartache and trauma, no matter what I eventually would experience here, good or bad. So, you know, it was kind of random and kind of kismet, but, you know, I wouldn't change it.
And then for me, you know, the story was similar to Bakari's in that, you know, a former classmate of mine came to Sewanee before me. And also my coaches kind of, you know, said, hey, why don't you take a visit or just look? Because out of high school, I was a D1 prospect. So I could have took, you know, the same journey as Bakari, you know, still had to make my own tapes, send them out. Internet wasn't as popping back then. But so I did that, you know, got a few offers and things of that nature. So it was PWI, or predominantly white institution, or, you know, HBCU, historically black. I chose Sewanee because I wanted to do something different. I'm from Decatur, Georgia, specifically from Atlanta, literally. And I figured I already had the city experience going home. So for school, I wanted to try something different. So I said, I'll take a chance on Sewanee with it being on the mountain, kind of having that esoteric population in terms of, you know, when I'm out at the grocery store, people say, or see a Suwannee shirt, and they say, oh, you went to Suwannee? Yeah. Oh my God, you must be really smart.
Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of took that and ran with it mm-hmm. and was like, you know, yeah, I could go to, you know, UGA, Georgia Tech, and be at home in my comfort zone, but I wanted to push myself. Mm-hmm. And so coming to Suwannee, being a true minority that I could see, mm-hmm. you know, I kind of, when I came in 2006 along with Bakari, you know, although I was kind of insulated with the football team, going to class with, you know, more wealthier, mm-hmm. more affluent classmates, you know, and interacting with them, that helped me to build my character for later in life.
Absolutely.
Yeah, college is like an imperative part when development occurs. You meet so much different people, and for like both of you, it's different coming in, yeah. right? So it's like something a little different coming in as well. You fell in love with the campus. You wanted something different. You decided like, yeah, I'm gonna come isolate myself with these people. It's gonna be great with all these like trees and bushes surrounding me. It's gonna be amazing. But
and that's totally Justin. I mean, literally will throw himself into the most uncomfortable circumstances, and you will not know that he's uncomfortable. He'll just be chilling.
Yeah, but it builds character though,
absolutely.
Right? Definitely. So. What were your first impressions of Suwannee? You came for like math studying, the
summer program in high school. My first impression of Suwannee was that it was beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, the campus speaks for itself during that summer. And there was so much to do. Mm-hmm. I know you're thinking, what is there to do on campus? But you have to think, like, high school student, high school program. During the summer, we went caving.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know that there are caves around Suwannee's campus, and you literally can go caving. Mm-hmm. We went caving, and we just did trails, all the people in the program, and it was just a very serene and peaceful summer
yeah.
of learning. So my first impression was there's so much to do on the beautiful campus, and it's peaceful. To find out there's not that much to do up here. But you come here as a student,
yeah.
You make fun.
Yes,
so,
definitely.
Yeah.
For me, my first time coming up here, as I mentioned before, was during the spring break, so there was nothing going on.
Yeah.
I met with admission staff, and I also met with Jessica Hardy. Shout out Jessica. So she talked me through that meeting with her, like having that meeting with her before I made any decisions about coming here was crucial because she was able to be honest with me to an extent that, you know, admission may not be able to. So she was like, listen, there's not gonna be a whole lot to do. Like, once you go to one Suwannee party, you have been to most Suwannee parties.
Yeah.
But if you are looking for somewhere where you can add a quality education and supplement your intellect, this is a great place to be. She's like, you know, she was telling me about some of the opportunities she has set up for herself, and you know, coming from where I was coming from, where there was not a lot of opportunity for someone who looked like me, a black kid, 6'3", and everybody thinks, oh, some type of sport. You know, that was encouraging because it was like, I can come here and I can build myself outside of the football field. And of course, I met our goofy coach. You know, he cracked me up the first time I met him. He was a good dude with a good spirit. And I had been around coaches who had no good intentions mm-hmm. for anybody, no matter what you look like. They just wanted to use and abuse us. So meeting him was refreshing, just knowing that not all coaches are built the same. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like Asia Keys mentioned, like I mentioned before, the campus is beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, one of my favorite things to do was to just find a random spot somewhere on this campus and sit down and just read. Mm-hmm. Because nobody's gonna mess with you. It's gonna be mm-hmm. quiet.
Yeah.
And you can just go through your thoughts. If you're trying to piece together a paper, you can piece through your ideas. Everybody's doing the same thing, so nobody's gonna mess with you.
Mm-hmm.
So that was wonderful. And you know, as far as us being surrounded by, you know, a whole bunch of white folks, I came from a school that was just like that.
Yeah.
Except they were, you know, they drove monster trucks and, you know, baled hay. So it wasn't,
mm-hmm.
that part of it wasn't very different for me. I was very used to being kind of the outlier.
Mm-hmm.
But the most important thing to me was that there were people who looked like me, who thought like me, who had very similar experiences to me, like Justin, that I could pair with and see my way through that. Because even at that age, without being able to articulate it at 18, I understood inherently that that was going to be important in order for me to get what I needed from a place like Sewanee.
And for me, I came on probably the direct opposite weekend he did. Mm-hmm. I was here during spring semester, and there were an ample amount of parties. And so I stayed with football players. Mm-hmm. We went out that night, stayed out, had a great time. But when I came to campus, I was kind of indifferent. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know, it's nice, nice buildings and whatever. But, you know, I was here to get an education and, you know, play some ball. So, you know, to me, it was just going to college. I wasn't particularly worried about, you know, the how I would, you know, interact with anybody, because, you know, I went to school in a pretty big metropolitan area. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a job, worked outside of school, and did all those things. So, you know, I could assimilate myself in the, you know, pretty much different scenarios.
So we all had quite different experiences, but both of you had, like, the first impression of Sewanee was, it was serene.
Yeah.
It was in nature, it's isolating, it's, oh, this is so nice, this would help me focus. It helped you develop, like, outside characteristics outside of just playing football. So y'all had holistic development, which is great.
Yeah.
As character, right? So I did PRE, which is an orientation program where you do caving, you do hiking. And I was like, oh.
Is it in the summer?
It is a few days before school starts.
Okay,
so
the campus is empty.
The campus is,
And
I was like, signing up for it, I was just like, well, I'm going to be isolated on the mountain. I'm going to start hiking. I'm going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came and I absolutely hated it. It was not for me.
Yeah.
I do not like being outside. The bugs were out there. I was miserable.
Yeah.
But I did make friends.
Yeah.
I did get to see another like part of Sewanee because
mm-hmm.
I had also come here during spring break and the campus was empty and I felt indifferent about it. I was just like, okay, buildings, all right, okay, I'm just gonna come here. It has good ratings academically, you know, and that was one of the things I was most focused on.
Yeah.
So you came in with the intention of studying what exactly?
Math.
So you
I came
math
in with the
major.
Intention of studying math. I did not end up being a math major.
Oh.
I think calculus 3 hit.
Oh.
I was like, what is this? And then I ended up doing psychology, which I love.
Okay.
Yeah, I came in with the intention, but that was not the reality.
Yeah. So you major in psychology.
Psychology,
and what
uh-huh.
about you two? Did you figure out what exactly you wanted to study and major in while you were here?
Oh, this is Justin. I was econ.
Uh-huh.
Knew I was going to do, you know, something in finance, bar none. Like, I came into college knowing my plan. I just needed a piece of paper.
Yes, dude.
And you got it.
I came in not really having an idea and just figuring that I would do econ and just do something like just with that, just straight up,
mm-hmm.
so I can go into the corporate world, get some type of job. Had no idea what that job was going to be. Had no plan like Justin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was complete opposite with that. It's crazy to be best friends. Like we have opposite ideas, but I guess that's why we vibe so much, because we bounce things off of each other.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came in, I thought econ major, yada yada yada. Did econ 101? No sir. No, sir. My mind just didn't work the right way.
Yeah.
With the graphs and, you know, supply and demand. I understood the concepts okay.
Mm-hmm.
The graph part was not it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the math.
Mm-hmm.
The math
quickly
wasn't
changed
mapping.
My math major.
My soul left my body
yeah.
so many times in calculus. I had to take it twice and I hated all of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, no, I can't keep doing this. And part of the reason I wanted to be an econ major is because I was trying to do something that my dad,
mm-hmm.
I think, wanted to do more than I did. Because, you know, he was a very intelligent guy, business oriented.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he kind of wished that if he could have gone back to school, he'd had the opportunity to do like an econ major at a PWI or something like
yeah.
that, and it would have gave him some different avenues. So, you know, I was trying to meet that expectation for him, but by the time I got sophomore year and that wasn't working, I was like, I'm lost. And then thank God for Inez Anders. She will not be here this weekend, but Inez, if you ever hear this, I love you to death. She grabbed me and she took me to see Professor Roberson. And I told him I didn't want to be a dusty historian. Okay. And he looked at me and he said, if you think that that's all you can do with a history degree or an American studies degree, I have news for you. You can be so much more. Mm-hmm. And they saved me.
Yeah.
They saved me for myself. So I wound up graduating with an American studies degree with concentration in African studies. And every step of my career, every step of my life, anything that I've accomplished is directly attributed to the things that I learned sitting in Roberson's office and with Professor Whittier Anderson. Mm. Without them, I'd be lost. Sorry, I'm terrible.
No problem.
Okay, sorry.
No, but it's real. Yeah. Don't apologize for tearing up. It's real.
And it's kind of why we've built the Roberson Project in honor of his name. He was here when we instilled it, did it to come, because he meant so much to so much Black alums.
As you see.
Here, right? Yeah. And we can see that you're having someone a part of the student body, especially at a PWI, predominantly white institution, is so imperative to like knowing that we have someone that looks like us, who understands us, who feels the same way we do, and they're looking out for us too. I didn't have that experience. We did have a vice chancellor, but then he was shipped off. Just as soon as I was coming in, they were like, yeah, no, bye. But having good figures, you know, especially as a student here, students say all the time that it's your professors that made the major, and that's exactly it. Like, you might just get into a class coming in like, oh yeah, I'm gonna do a math major, and then your professor, your psych professor, is amazing, and you were just like, wow, I'm in love with this, and ended up changing your direction in life forever. And like, you can't imagine what would have happened if you didn't take that class, if you didn't go to that office hour with that professor, if you didn't see them and this talk to them, you know what I mean? So that's, thank you so much for sharing that. It's a very good story. Yeah, most definitely. And are there any other stories that you'd like to share about your experience here at Suwannee, maybe a weekend? want to talk about it, your classes, what was that, what were you guys involved in, what did you like do apart on like campus? I know you said you went caving. Did you get a chance to do that?
As a student?
As a student.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I went caving was a part of that program in high school where they made everyone go caving. Mm-hmm. But I was a part of really dance here, Perpetual Motion.
Yeah.
I started the Tiger Girls dance team. I was founder of that.
Okay.
And so back then we only danced for basketball. I think now they do football as well. Cheerleading. These guys play every weekend that when I was a senior. So I was more involved in like dance and cheerleading, sorority, campus life.
Okay.
Campus life. I feel like there's a bunch of other things that now I can't remember. Oh, one main thing I did, and you should look into this if they still do it, outreach trips. So every spring break, we did outreach trips, and I went to Miami twice and then Ecuador once.
Yes. So there's actually a trip being led by one of our juniors this spring break.
Only one trip?
Only one trip. Well, there's one to New Orleans, I believe.
That's interesting. Back in my day, they had like 10.
Yeah,
it was like everywhere. Ecuador, Miami, or the other places. I feel like Dixon. Dixon's, he's not here anymore, is he? He used to just pick pockets in cities and outreach, and different staff would lead the outreach trip. Yeah, that's what I was involved in.
Okay.
I remember student life more than I do my classes.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you.
How would you describe like
the and AAA.
Yeah.
They called it AAA back then, African American Alliance. Okay. Now it's called
the BSU.
BSU, right. But AAA, I was vice president when the Anthony was president. Yeah. I don't know. But I was doing that a lot too.
Yeah.
So yeah. was good. Good times.
Well, it was good times. It's funny we all doing this together because me and Justin got introduced to a lot of campus life because of Asia and her class, because they were seniors when we came in. Mm-hmm. So they were like pushing us to do stuff, looking at us like we were idiots because we were, and, you know, just helping us get integrated with being here. So like, you know, me and Justin, we were in football, so that's majority of the time that's what we were doing. We were outside on that field, sweating, bleeding, beating on each other, and then being like, "What you want to eat?" So, yep. So I mean, that was a huge part of the experience here. But of course, African American Alliance became a big part of what we did because it gave us a sense of unity, fellowship. Once a week, we did our meetings. We did parties with AAA as well.
Parties at the house.
Parties at the house. Mm-hmm.
The multicultural center, we call it the house.
Yeah.
It's fine.
But we were heavily involved with that. Eventually, we started up Sewanee Praise at the end of our freshman year. So that became a staple for those of us who continued after that. Asia's class graduated. They got some participation. It wasn't a whole lot. But we're able to carry that forward. Is Sewanee Praise still? Well, it lasted longer than we thought it would.
You graduated, right?
Yeah.
Performance stuff.
So yeah.
Is this like a choir kind of?
Yeah, it's a gospel praise choir.
Okay, so there is still a choir, but there is no Sewanee Praise.
Right now. Is it the college choir?
Yeah, the college choir.
It wasn't that.
No.
No, we sang gospel.
Okay.
We sang the gospel. So we would travel. We sang here on campus. Mm-hmm. We would travel to local churches and sang because, you know, we come to a Presbyterian college. Mm-hmm. But a lot of us are Baptists, mm-hmm. Methodists. You know, the way we sing our songs is very different.
Yeah.
So that also gave us another sense of fellowship because mm-hmm. we were able to share that with each other,
yeah.
That commonality of experience. So Sewanee Praise was amazingly productive for us like that, especially those of us who got here didn't necessarily want to do the church thing every Sunday.
Yeah.
Like, I'd get my church in every now and then, and I can go be a bum the rest of my Sunday. So Sewanee Praise was huge. You know, if somebody's listening to this and they want to restart it, do it.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Yeah.
Do it.
And I think I think there would be a real need for it here because I remember people, black students especially, who wanted to apply for the choir and then like fell out of it shortly afterwards. It was just not what they were used to. It's not that they're familiar with, and it's like the same, what do they call it, like choruses or hymns. Eventually, they get burnt out. It wasn't exactly what they pictured, what they were used to. So I think that would be a good thing to create for a sense of community. Like the BSU right now, it's the name was changed to include like students like me who are not exactly like African American or African, but like, you know, the Caribbean, because we have a good mix here now and then. So but I still think that it shared, it provides community for students here. Even if we're mad at each other, we're gonna like start talking again because we're a few black students on campus and we need to stick together. We're gonna band together. But you can continue.
I was gonna say that's the beautiful thing, especially with Bakari's story. That's the beautiful thing about Sewanee is that if you have an interest,
mm-hmm.
gospel music, dance for me, you can start it.
Yeah.
You can find a professor who's gonna, what do they call it, sponsor or whatever.
Yeah.
Professor to kind of look over it, and you can start whatever your interest is, and Sewanee supports that and it gives you the resources. And I know they gave Tiger Girls dance team a lot of money. We had like 4 outfits for the whole I know. Same for Sewanee Praise, with likely the resources to travel to the different churches. And
yeah, I mean, vans,
shirts.
We eventually got multicolored shirts. I came back a couple of years later. They had gowns. I was like, can I come back?
Right. That's the beautiful thing about this campus. If you have an interest, they nurture it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you get to do it.
Yeah.
You're not afraid to start something because you have the support.
Oh yeah, besides Suwanee Praise, I also participated in an acapella singing group called Rescue. So that was a thing too.
Can you just sing for us right now?
No.
Oh, just pop it out. I'll be the background. Okay. What you want?
I'm not messing
with you. For the oral history?
Actually, it's very necessary that I listen to everyone sing. It's mandatory. Did you not read the consent form? It was on it.
You know what? My eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He has trampled out the vintage where the greats of wrath were sown. It's like it.
Beautiful.
I don't need to sing because I knew it was
out of practice. I'm such a dad now. I'm out of practice.
Oh,
I sing a lot of lullabies now.
Your child is lucky that you actually
can sing. Yeah.
But I was in Rescue. It was me, Dexter Richardson, John Ugorji, and Calvin. Yeah, Calvin. And then eventually, unfortunately, Calvin had to leave. So then it was just me, Dexter, and John. We kind of kept it going. So we had songs that Dexter wrote. Dexter had songs that he's produced and made now that, you know, we're all old. He had songs that he wrote. We remixed some stuff. We did some old school gospel songs too. Yeah, I did a lot of singing on this campus. I'm sure there's more than a few professors that remember that. So yeah, it was fun. And of course, you know, outreach trips just like Asia. Mm-hmm. I did Miami twice. I wish I had gone to some other cities though, because I didn't fully value how incredible that type of travel can be, mm-hmm, for your experience and your mindset. So I wish I had done a few more of the cities that we offered at the time, especially now they don't offer it. That's crazy
because Ecuador was every year, and Dixon actually led Myers Dixon led the Ecuador trip.
Dixon Myers.
So yeah, mm-hmm, his office was right here in the DC.
Mm-hmm. You can go talk to him about any of trips and he'd be like,
any trips, any cave, anything.
Sorry,
Jeff. Go ahead, Jeff. You good? And outside of all of that, I was a legal hustler back then. So I did everything from, there was something called Book Fool back then where, you know, they buy books and all that type of stuff.
He put me on.
Me and BK used to drive shuttles back and forth to Nashville.
Oh, no, not Bobby.
Well, under Miss Barbara.
Okay.
In the student center. We come pick up students from Nashville, and we could do that because at the time Georgia licenses were better than everybody else's. Because we could drive 15 passenger vans. So we did
students
that.
Students driving. What a bad idea.
Everybody was so jealous though. We didn't have to do any of the tests. We just be like, Georgia license, here, pick up. Take our shirt.
Yep. Yeah.
What was the rise like? Who had the odds? What kind of music were we bumping?
Oh, yeah.
Let's see.
Well, I don't think we had aux back then because it was old school.
The CDs.
We had CDs, definitely. When I was in college, it was CDs and desktop computers.
It was mostly radio. We didn't have the convenience of today. There was no Bluetooth. There was no aux cord. If you had an aux cord attached to a cassette tape, it was
a little bit dumb.
But no, you needed CDs, and if you didn't have CDs, like if you were driving a diverse crowd, I'm just putting on something general. You know, if it's a bunch full of, I would be lost if it was a bus full of white chicks, which I listen to. y'all know what I listen to, so you want to listen to that?
Yeah.
Now we can listen to your music, man. Jam down the road. But, I mean, let's see, what was that, 2008?
Nelly?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
Nelly. Or was that before 2008?
Nelly would have been 2000.
When I was in school, Nelly.
Yeah. Nelly.
So like that, oh man,
Pastor Troy was big.
Pastor Troy, do you know who Pastor Troy?
Well, I mean,
oh,
that was
she doesn't look. She's a known Pastor Troy.
Of course she does.
She's so cute.
Oh my god!
Go on Spotify or Amazon Music, if they're on it, and make me pray before you listen to it. But then
start with Vice Versa.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Pastor Troy
is in the car now.
Yeah.
So that was big for the football team because a bunch of us from Georgia. and we all love Pat. If you're from Georgia and you grew up in that time when Pastor Troy was it,
he was still Charlotte Low too. Charlotte
and Charlotte Sierra Low. Was popular. One two step. Yes. I love it. Yes. Yes. One two step. I did a perpetual motion
dance to
that.
Yep. Sierra was popular.
Sierra was popular.
Missy Elliott was still putting out songs every so often, but she was starting to slow down. Mm-hmm. Timbaland was still putting out stuff with Justin Timberlake. Man, listen to so much music. Drake released So Far Gone our junior year. That mixtape was it. Let me see. Lupe Fiasco. Oh man, just jam out Lupe Fiasco. Gorilla Zoe. I don't know if Alfonso would ever listen to this, but man, we used to jam to some Gorilla Zoe, man. Ooh. Mm-hmm. My speakers got shattered and things were terrible. Yeah, there was some pretty decent music back then. It hadn't turned into mumble rap, but music from the South was it. Like Outkast was still that deal.
Yeah.
I mean, I already said T.I., Ludacris. Like, yeah, Southern music was popular.
Also, work study. Did you guys do work study? Yes. I forgot about work study was a big thing for college.
Yeah.
I worked at the daycare. First, I went to the library and I fell asleep every day, and then I did the daycare. Is that still open?
Yeah, the daycare is still open.
Yeah.
It seems to work.
I think it was 8 hours a week. And then I ended up doing the BC with Miss Barbara. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. And I worked at facilities, and we was popping overtime.
Facilities.
So, like, everybody who do the grounds and stuff, and the building down here. So I was all over. I had the golf cart and everything.
Mm-hmm. You see Justin roll around? He'd be like, "I'm at work study."
Yeah, study. That's hilarious. I didn't know you did.
Yeah, now they give the golf carts to like me now because I'm an Arcadian, which is like a tour guide, and I drive around and I'm like, oh, this is this, and then my friends wave at me. I'm like, hey, you know, because I can't really drive yet, but like they still, music is one of the things that like is really connecting us now. Sewanee, I can talk about the radio station. It was recently reopened by a black student here, and they like restarted the work study program there. And they're thinking of like putting back the radio station and having DJs come in. People applied volunteer to be DJs, so we have a Ralston listening room in the library even where students volunteer. They just go in and they play whatever songs they want. The room is like really nice. They spent a lot of money on that room, so it is like very high quality, the music that's coming into here. I'm like, ooh.
Are they gonna let students have radio shows? That's something I remember. I had a radio show, LaJasia show.
Oh, and what did that?
It was Lenora Joy Asia.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Text Lenora right now. It's called the LaJasia Show. We're like, talk to me now. That was our little thing.
Yo.
And we had a radio show once a week, and we would just talk on the. So they should have students.
Yeah.
Also, you know.
Yeah, I definitely hope they implement that. Right now, they're trying to get like DJs to come on air and stuff. Yeah, that's great.
Y'all were crazy. We listened to y'all a few times. Y'all were nuts.
I'm just completely normal.
Yeah.
No shame.
Do you like to share anything else that you were involved in, maybe?
So, yeah, speaking of the hustles, you know, besides driving the van and stuff, there was this listserv. I think I stumbled on it one day. I think I might have even been through admissions, but, you know, I was looking for more cash flow. And so it was kind of the old school TaskRabbit. Y'all know that app? Okay, so in bigger cities, there's TaskRabbit, where, you know, everyday people, whoever has a special skill, signs up, and you put your skills out for bid, or, you know, you can do jobs for people. So I did that in Sewanee. So I know one time I was off a Hightower Road. I was cleaning some guy's gutter. Huge liability.
Really?
They probably wouldn't let people do it now, but, you know, I loved it back then. I was taking, you know, hella risk.
Oh, yeah.
But it was good.
You're making money, probably.
Yeah.
They paid you?
Oh, yeah. Cash.
Oh.
Cash. I mean, it was Sewanee residents.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. You could have seen.
I didn't even know that existed.
SFA insurance.
Ooh. I know. That's like, I fell.
What about like little things you do on the side? I know, like one, I'm like the Suwannee hairdresser. I go on braiding hair, twisting hair, retwisting locks. I've
that
learned it all.
Was missing. After y'all left, that
that's
was
me
gone.
For the guys that yeah. had braids. Mm-hmm. I would braid their hair pretty much once a week.
Yeah,
all of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good on you. You listen. Get that back. That
I would do it. They didn't pay.
Oh, I get paid.
Well, I don't charge
for
haircuts. Yeah, I'm
We do have like two barbers right now, and one of them is transferring, so we're gonna.
Oh, you can load it up.
Yeah.
The hair was a thing here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Get that man on schedule. Terrible.
So, my last question is, who made a difference if you could attribute it in your life at Suwannee? We already touched on it a little bit before, but like, if there's anything, anyone specifically could attribute, like.
I'll pop off on this one. So for me, I was an econ major, and I think one of the most influential professors was Professor Mohiden, who has since, you know, moved on from the university. But she did kind of outreach trips during spring break. So while I did the Miami trip twice, I believe in my junior or senior year, I went with Professor Mohiden to Dominican Republic, and we learned about a program called Esperanza. Mm-hmm. So it was a microfinance program, and Dominican Republic's, you know, kind of a third world country. So, you know, with Bikara saying that, you know, he wished he would have experienced certain things, you know, that was one of my most profound experiences in that, you know, yes, we stayed in a hotel in Santo Domingo, but during the day, we were in deep into the countryside in terms of, we learned about, you know, the colorism down there. And if you're a darker skin tone, you know, you're treated differently. And, you know, coming from America, living in the South, like I understand all that. And, you know, fair skinned Dominicans ain't really feeling, you know, Haitians. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a real tension there. And it's like in some of the parts we were in, you know, you could see the despair on some of the Haitian faces who had come over the border to Dominican Republic and were just living that rough lifestyle. And trips like that kind of, you know, molded me into being appreciative for the status that I have in life and kind of not looking, you know, looking down on, you know, certain people. Because even if you're at the lowest rung in America, some people have no idea what it's like to, you know, live in a stone house with no electricity or first world problems. And I think a lot of people need that experience to broaden their horizon and broaden their scope. It's like today we're too focused on the politics of, you know, who's spending more or, you know, race and all that other stuff. And it's a lot of other things that are more important. So, you know, yes, I look at life through a financial lens, but at the same time, I look at it through humanity as well. And so, you know, Professor Mohiden, even though she taught macroeconomics, you know, that trip was one of the most profound things that kind of guided me to where I am now.
Thank you so much for sharing.
So, probably the person who had the biggest impact on me was Houston Roberson. I'm gonna tell a story from a different angle. Do they still assign mentors for your first year?
No, they don't. So you get for the first year you were assigned like an advisor to help you with your classes, and then eventually you choose your own advisor on your major.
I used the wrong terminology. So my first assigned advisor was Professor Smith. He's retired now, very earthy guy, had a completely shredded robe that he would never replace. He classic guy. But I took his, I can't remember exactly the name of the class, but basically he would just take us out and walk us all across this campus and tell us the historical significance in the landscape itself. Yeah. So I learned value through him of looking surface to find the truth, which is which was so much more fundamentally impactful than I really understood at that time. But that's off to another point. So when it came time for me to choose another advisor, I told him that, you know, like I mentioned before, I wanted to be an econ major, and I really needed to find a advisor that could get, kind of get me going on the right track with that. So he assigned me, he told me that probably the bet, my best bet was Judy Cunningham. She was the wife of the vice chancellor at that time. Thank you. And you know, she was one of the calculus professors, so she would probably help me get over that hump. So assigned to Trudy, God bless her. She wanted to help me so badly, but because she didn't have an understanding of my perspective on life and how confused I was and how to address that, instead of talking to me, getting to know me a little bit, and being like, you got the brain of a historian, her solution was to throw me in several different places and see what stuck, like pieces of spaghetti. So I did a comp sci class, I did her calculus class, I did so many random electives that I wound up wasting time with electives. Mm-hmm. So after I spoke to Professor Robeson the first time with Inez, and I had spoken to Trudy, and she laid out this grand master plan for me for my degree, I just felt defeated. I just really wasn't feeling it, because I told her, you know, I'm really thinking about doing the American Studies major. She was like, no, I think you should. She told me no, and she told me I think you should do this, because she figured out too late that I was looking for direction. So I felt defeated. I felt like she, you know, she meant well, but she really didn't have what it took to really guide me where I needed to go. So I went and sat down with Professor Roberson, and I cried in his office. I just said, you know, I got an advisor who just doesn't hear me. She doesn't understand. And I know it's not because she doesn't care, but she just doesn't get it. And he listened to me, and he let me cry, and he let me go through everything, like just tell him about my life. And he said, I'm gonna take you over to the registrar's office. I'm gonna be your advisor. And I'm gonna make it so that you not only graduate, but you graduate on time the way you want to. Because I was also facing a situation financially where I might have to go home. And part of Trudy's solution was, you just work in Atlanta for a summer. And I was like, at that time I lived in Atlanta. I lived in Athens where there was no opportunities for me, because all I did was apply for jobs in the summer and nobody would ever call or ever say anything. So she just didn't get it. So yet again, he put his Superman man cape on, and he came and saved me. Like he got me signed up for him to be my advisor. He signed me up for summer school. He said, you're gonna come to summer school, you're gonna do this class with me. I want you to pick other classes that kind of pique your interest. I did a Greek mythology class this summer, which was fantastic, with Professor McDonough. Is he still learning?
I don't think so.
Wherever you are, McDonough, God love you. I'll hit you up on Facebook, bro. But hit that class is a lot of fun too. So that was one of my two classes for the summer. But I mean, every step of my way in making it through this university, no matter what I had going on. At one point I was president of AAA, and a lot of the conflicts that we were talking about before were getting to me, and I just didn't know how to manage. And I would go sit in his office, and he would commiserate, and he would be like, it's okay, here's what you do. And he would have steps for me to follow. And not that I didn't have advice to get from my parents. My parents were first generation college students, so they understood some of the struggles. But they were older, they were baby boomers. Mm-hmm. So there was some context they just didn't have. And because he was right there, he was able to give me that context that I needed in order to get through what I needed to get through. So, I mean, without Houston Roberson, I never would have gotten out of this place. I wouldn't be where I am today, wouldn't have my wife, wouldn't have my baby. So without him, I wouldn't have made it, man. We still would have been friends, Justin.
You would have been stuck with Justin. Without your beautiful wife and child.
Just been a godfather, so it's terrible.
For me, it was definitely Lisa Howick and Barbara Banks, so it's not professors. Mm-hmm. Lisa Howick brought me to Admitted Students Weekend in like a 15-passenger van, that's a theme, from Atlanta to Tennessee. This is after the bridge program, so I remember Jaime Chavez was in the van with us, Lenore Cook was in the van, not at Tehran. And there were like other students that got admitted from Atlanta, and it was just, she brought us up to Sewanee for the weekend. In a shuttle, almost crashed 3 times. We still laugh about it now. And she was just there, like, you know, I invited her to my wedding. She was at my wedding. And so she was just really a present, positive figure in my life since then. And Barbara Branks, she's my heart. Miss Barbara was here all my 4 years. I believe she retired 2 years ago or last year. She's not here anymore. She's retired. But as Bakari said that he would go to Professor Robinson's office, I'd go to Miss Barbara's office in the BC and just vent. She was very supportive. She understood. She helped me start Tiger Girl. She was a faculty advisor. She was also invited to my life events. And so she's just still present in my life. And, you know, I'd always be grateful to Miss Barbara.
Damn,
and her hair was always done. I was just like, where? It's Barbara. And so she would like tell us like down the mountain, don't go to her hairstylist, and her nails were always done. She just looked perfect, and I was like, we're on a mountain.
Yeah.
We're all struggling. And she's just amazing.
And just to add on to that, I mean, you know, Professor Robeson was key to me. Miss Barbara was too. She was key to everybody.
Yeah.
Every person.
Everybody. Like whatever we needed, she was there. Like she would make sure. Like, I would come talk to her sometimes, and sometimes she would be like, you know what, you know what you talk to about this? Let me tell you who you talk to. Even if it was just like some mundane social nonsense, go talk to so-and-so. They'll get you straight on this, because this happened, this happened, this happened. Let me tell you about this. Mm-hmm. She used to break it down.
The Olivia Pope of Sewanee, fix all problems.
Yeah.
Fix all problems behind the scenes.
Be supreme.
But she linked us up with the vans. You know, we had first dibs. Mm-hmm. It was like, hey, need a little extra cash. You know, I'll try to dance for
you. Fix a hole into a sorority apartment. I mean, really? I just kept it on the low.
Let me show you how to do this. Come on, listen. She was out here saving souls and saving lives. So, I mean,
saved
listen.
Saved all of us.
There was a tribe and a community in this place that none of us would have been able to get anywhere else that we were thinking. So, without those people, like, it was hard for me to even just say Professor Robeson, because, you know, I'm thinking Woody Register, I'm thinking Barbara Banks, I'm thinking Miss Jana sitting right there next to Miss Barbara Banks, helping her out, like.
Hey, Mr. B was a connector, too.
Listen, he always had a connect. He was like, you trying to get a party space? Hang on, my president's trying to get something done, so I need something over here.
Mm-hmm. You sound just like him. You heard this.
That summer school, it was being out.
Stop. Oh, my gosh. I'm saying?
Nikki Hamilton.
Oh, yeah.
Clutch. Much in the clutch. Man. Yeah. I don't know if she did it on purpose. I once had a universal card where I could get in anywhere. It was crazy. I was like,
Probably next.
But Carter's like, she don't work here no more. And on top of that, it was years in the past.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't do anything terrible because I was a proctor at the time. It was probably a mistake. But it was great. I can go visit my friends real quick. Let me let you in. It's fine. Stay with that. How'd you get in here?
Don't worry about it.
I can tell that story now.
Decades.
Years ago.
Over a decade.
Just a little bit. We graduated in 10. Thank you.
Which is over a decade.
Just a little bit, though. We're not into the second
decade. Almost a decade and a half. If we want to talk about it.
I mean, which one of us is closest to 40?
Oh!
Okay, let's not start drama.
Only me. In like 7 years, I'm just.
well, that's it. That's all
Thank
the questions
you.
That I have.
You're such a good interviewer.
Would you believe when I said this is my first interview?
Well, look at you. What? Multi-person interview.
Naturally approached.
I know.
Well, the issues are Arcadian, so she gotta keep strike the conversation.
But thank you so much for
thank
this interview.
You.
Yes, of course.